Imagine paying a massive, just eye-watering premium to buy a luxury home.
Right.
And doing so specifically so you can walk down your street to the exact spot where a smog-choked, grease-stained, noise-polluting 19th-century lumber mill used to dump its toxic waste.
It sounds completely absurd on its face.
Right. I mean, it sounds like a terrible real estate investment.
Absolutely terrible.
But in Bellingham, Washington, that specific patch of, well, formerly toxic waste is now the single most valuable, culturally significant piece of real estate in the entire city.
Yeah, it really is the absolute beating heart of the community.
And welcome to the deep dive. Today, we are unpacking exactly how that happened.
Because it forces you to completely reevaluate how cities evolve, you know?
Definitely. I think the assumption we usually make is that pristine natural spaces have, well, just always been pristine.
Right, like city planners just graciously drew a fence around a beautiful forest or a beach 100 years ago and said, let's leave this alone.
Exactly. But the reality of urban waterfronts is often the exact opposite.
Yeah, what looks like untouched nature today is frequently the result of an incredibly brutal, decades-long mechanical and legal battle to undo just catastrophic industrial damage.
And that is the exact paradox we are unpacking for you today.
It's a fascinating one.
We are taking a massive deep dive into a very specific 11-acre strip of land in Bellingham called Boulevard Park.
But, and this is crucial, to understand it, we are not looking at some glossy, highly polished tourism board brochure.
No, absolutely not. You know, the ones that paint over the cracks, use heady filters on the photos, and pretend every day is a sunny 75-degree paradise.
Yeah, those are entirely unhelpful if you actually want to understand a place.
Exactly. So our source material today is remarkably unique. It is a deeply honest, boots-on-the-ground local guide written by Gennaro Schaefer.
He's a real estate broker with Bellwether Real Estate, right?
Yes, exactly. A guy who lives, works, and breathes this specific market.
And, you know, the value of using a real estate broker's guide rather than a tourism pamphlet is that a broker's fundamental job is to evaluate utility and friction.
Oh, that's a great way to put it.
Yeah, because a tourist visits a park once and leaves.
Right.
But a resident has to live with that park's infrastructure, its traffic, its noise, and its seasonal rhythms every single day.
And Schaefer's guide promises the unvarnished truth about Boulevard Park because, well, his clients need to know exactly what they are buying into before they sign a 30-year mortgage in the surrounding neighborhoods.
Right. There's a lot of money on the line.
So our mission today is to explore this space with that same level of holistic, almost surgical scrutiny.
We're going to look at the undeniable aesthetic amenities of Boulevard Park.
Because it is beautiful.
It is stunning.
Oh.
But we are also going to dig deeply into its clattering industrial history, the specific seasonal rhythms that dictate its use, the very real and sometimes infuriating logistical trade-offs of visiting it, and ultimately how this single strip of reclaimed land anchors the entire local economy.
I love it. Okay, to anchor us geographically, before we get into the mechanics of the park itself, where exactly are we?
So Boulevard Park sits on the east shore of Bellingham Bay.
Okay.
It is tucked into a residential neighborhood called South Hill.
Got it.
This positions it almost perfectly as a bridge between the commercial downtown core of Bellingham to the north and the historic brick district of Fairhaven to the south.
And just for practical purposes, the park is open to the public daily from 6 in the morning to 10 at night.
Right.
Okay, let's unpack this because before we can even talk about the famous overwater boardwalks or the sweeping ocean sunsets, we have to talk about what kind of park this actually is.
That's a really important distinction.
Yeah, the source guide spends a significant amount of time right up front setting proper expectations, which implies that people frequently arrive with the wrong
Oh,
assumptions.
they definitely do. The American concept of a quote-unquote park is incredibly generalized, and that generalization creates a lot of architectural confusion.
How do you mean?
Well, if I say the word park to you, what is the default image that populates in your mind?
I instantly picture sprawling green athletic fields.
Right.
I picture white lines painted on grass for soccer, maybe a cluster of chain-link tennis courts, the very distinct, loud popping sound of a pickleball game.
Oh, yeah. You can't escape pickleball these days.
No, you really can't. And definitely a giant fenced-in dirt area with 20 dogs running completely off-leash, chasing tennis balls. That is the utilitarian suburban American park model for me.
And Schaffer's Guide explicitly warns that Boulevard Park is absolutely none of those things.
None of them.
None. It is explicitly not a play-a-game park.
Okay.
You will not find a single sprawling athletic field.
Really?
Yeah. There are no tennis courts. There are no pickleball courts.
Wow.
And this is actually a major point of friction for many first-time visitors. There is absolutely no designated off-leash dog area.
Oh, I bet that catches people off guard.
Constantly. Every single dog must remain tethered to a leash.
But wait, if it lacks all of those traditional recreational amenities, what is the actual draw?
Well, the guide describes it as a compact, vibrant, social gathering place. A stroll, eat, watch the sunset park.
Stroll, eat, watch the sunset. But from an urban planning perspective, isn't taking out the sports fields a missed opportunity to serve the community?
You would think so, but it is actually a highly deliberate, calculated subtraction.
Interesting.
Yeah, in urban design, attempting to be everything to everyone usually results in a space that is just, well, mediocre at everything.
Yeah, jack of all trades, master of none.
Exactly. By intentionally pushing those sprawling, space-consuming athletic facilities to other municipal parks, places the guide mentions, like Cornwall Park, Fairhaven Park, or Lake Patton Boulevard Park, is free to hyper-specialize.
And it's pretty small, right?
Yes, it is only 11 acres, which is quite compact for a major municipal draw.
Right.
When you remove massive soccer fields from a compact footprint, you condense the human energy. You force density.
I have to say, that sounds somewhat claustrophobic to me.
How so?
Well, if I'm going to a park, I usually want to escape the density of the city, not be forced into a condensed pocket of human energy.
Sure, but the psychology of this specific space relies on a concept called the third place.
The third place.
Yeah, sociologist Ray Oldenburg coined this term to describe spaces that are neither your home, the first place, nor your work, the second place.
Okay, that makes sense.
A successful third place, like a great pub or a bustling town square, actually requires a high density of overlapping human activity to function.
So the people are part of the scenery.
Exactly. Boulevard Park is designed to maximize the view of the water and the social interaction of the community.
Which dictates a slower physical pace.
Right. By removing the infrastructure for intense physical competition, the design demands that you stroll, that you sit, and that you engage in the deeply communal act of simply gathering by the water.
So it's not a hike in the wilderness.
Not at all.
It sounds more like the city's favorite outdoor coffee shop that just happens to have a breathtaking bay instead of a strip mall parking lot.
That is a perfect analogy.
Yeah. And the guide is incredibly upfront about the fact that on a sunny day, this park is absolutely packed.
Shoulder to shoulder.
But looking at the sociology you just described, the dense social energy isn't a failure of the park's capacity. It is the actual intended feature.
What's fascinating here is precisely that. If you walked into Boulevard Park on a gorgeous 70-degree July evening and it was completely empty, it would feel deeply unsettling.
Like something was wrong.
Yeah. The human tapestry, couples walking, kids exploring the shoreline, people queued up for coffee, is the very mechanism that gives the space its vibrancy. The crowd is the amenity.
Okay, so the city has successfully drawn thousands of people to the shoreline to stroll and be social.
Right.
But that creates a massive engineering problem.
It does.
How do you safely funnel all those pedestrians along a rugged tidal shoreline without disrupting the environment?
And that is where the guide introduces the absolute crown jewel of the park.
The overwater boardwalk.
Yes. The boardwalk is the primary artery of that stroll and sunset experience.
So what are we actually looking at here?
Specifically, we are looking at Paler Dock and the Paddle Point Trestle.
Okay.
This is roughly a quarter mile stretch of wide wooden planking, but it doesn't just run parallel to the beach on the dirt.
Where is it?
It is built on massive pilings driven directly into the bedrock of Bellingham Bay.
Wow. Just visualize the mechanics of that for a second.
Yeah, it's wild.
You aren't walking on a paved sidewalk next to the water. You are physically suspended above the moving tides.
Exactly. You can look down between the heavy wooden planks and see the freezing, dark waters of the Salish Sea churning right underneath your shoes.
That is incredible.
And you have the vast, open expanse of the bay on your right, the rising neighborhood bluff and active railroad tracks on your left.
And if you look north on a clear day, the source notes you can see all the way to the snow-capped Canadian border peaks.
It provides a profound psychological shift.
Yeah.
You know, you are no longer an observer on the land looking at the sea. You have physically stepped out into the maritime environment.
But the architectural brilliance here isn't just the aesthetic novelty of walking over water, is it?
No, not at all. The boardwalk is actually a critical piece of functional municipal transit.
Really? A wooden boardwalk?
Yes, because it physically plugs into a much larger piece of infrastructure known as the South Bay Trail.
Ah, okay. Schaffer's guide highlights this trail as a major selling point for the area.
It's massive.
The South Bay Trail is a flat, paved, multi-use path stretching roughly 2.5 miles in each direction, right?
Correct. And it operates as a direct physical link between the downtown commercial core of Bellingham and the historic district of Fairhaven.
And Boulevard Park sits right in the middle of that route.
Which means the boardwalk isn't a dead-end recreational loop.
Right. Like in many cities, you drive to a park, walk in a circle around a pond, and drive home.
Exactly. The South Bay Trail fundamentally alters the circulatory system of Bellingham.
So people use it to actually get places.
Heavily. It is a highly utilized commuter corridor. It allows cyclists, pedestrians, and people heading to work to navigate between two major economic hubs, entirely bypassing the vehicular road network.
It is active, functional transit disguised as recreation.
That's a great way to put it.
But any time you have a piece of infrastructure trying to serve two wildly different masters, leisurely sunset watchers on one hand and high-speed bicycle commuters on the other, you are going to have friction.
Oh, inevitable friction.
And the source guide gives some very practical, highly cautionary notes about the reality of this shared space.
Yeah, Schaffer is very clear about the hazards.
First, there's the weather factor.
Right.
This is a wooden deck built over salt water in the Pacific Northwest. The guide warns that the decking gets incredibly slick when wet.
Yeah, wood, moisture, and maritime algae create a remarkably low friction surface.
Sounds dangerous.
It is a tangible physical hazard, especially for bikes.
And the guide also notes a significant architectural bottleneck. There is a ramp and stair combination on the Fairhaven end of the boardwalk. Wait. If this is supposed to be a primary commuter artery, a stair combo sounds like a massive oversight.
It does.
I mean, if I'm pushing a heavy double stroller or riding a commuter bike or relying on a wheelchair, a set of stairs on a quarter mile over water plank abruptly halts my momentum.
It absolutely introduces logistical friction, which is why the guide emphasizes it so heavily for potential residents. You have to plan your route based on your mobility.
Okay, so the architecture has some quirks.
But the greatest source of friction isn't architectural at all. It is behavioral.
The people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You have pedestrians stopping abruptly to photograph the sunset, families with toddlers meandering in unpredictable zigzags.
Dogs on leashes crossing the path.
Right. And commuter cyclists trying to maintain 15 miles per hour to get to work.
I'm trying to picture the chaos factor of that.
It can be a lot.
Sharing a potentially slippery quarter-mile wooden plank suspended over freezing water with that many conflicting uses on a packed summer day, how chaotic does this actually get? It sounds less like a relaxing stroll and more like a high-stress gauntlet.
Well, it could be, but they prevent constant collisions through the organic development of a highly localized social contract.
A social contract.
Yeah. There are no traffic lights out there on the planks. It relies entirely on spatial awareness and communal negotiation.
So everyone just has to pay attention.
Exactly. If you read Schaffer's breakdown, he is practically pleading with cyclists to slow down through this specific corridor.
Right.
The cyclist has to accept that they simply cannot maintain their desired speed. They must yield to the organic rhythm of the pedestrians.
And what about the pedestrians?
Conversely, pedestrians have to learn the unwritten rule of not stopping dead in the center of the path without checking over their shoulder.
It requires a constant active awareness of your neighbors.
It forces you out of your isolated bubble. You have to participate in the physical community to just walk down the path.
That's fascinating. But here's where the narrative of this park takes a massive jarring turn.
Oh, yeah. The history.
We keep talking about this massive wooden boardwalk built on pilings a quarter mile out over the water, but you cannot just decide to build a structure like that today.
No, absolutely not.
If a city proposed driving hundreds of industrial pilings into a pristine marine ecosystem in 2026, the environmental regulations would shut it down instantly.
In a heartbeat. The only reason Taylor Dock exists in its current form is because it is utilizing the bones of an old, century-old railroad trestle.
So it was grandfathered in.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that trestle is a glaring physical clue to a history that fundamentally reframes everything we've just discussed.
Because the land that Boulevard Park sits on is not untouched nature.
No, not even close. It is fully reclaimed, intensely remediated industrial waterfront.
Here's where it gets really interesting. We have to rewind the clock back to the 1850s.
Let's do it.
The guide points out that a man named William Paddle staked a claim and built a cabin near this spot.
Right.
And for more than 100 years after that cabin was built, Bellingham Bay was not a place where you took your family to watch a sunset.
Oh, definitely not. It was an absolute engine of heavy industry.
The sensory experience of that shoreline in the late 19th and early 20th centuries would be unrecognizable to us today.
It was a loud, working, smoking, clattering industrial edge.
The source lists the specific operations that used to line these shores. We're talking canneries, lumber mills, flour mills, coal gas works, log dumps, and railroad shops.
It was incredibly dense.
And this specific spot where people now sip artisan coffee was home to the E.K. Wood Lumber Mill in the early 1900s.
Yeah. And we have to unpack what a coal gas work actually implies for the soil chemistry, because it's pretty horrifying.
Okay, tell me.
Well, before widespread electrical grids, cities manufactured gas from coal to light their streets and homes. The byproduct of that process is coal tar, which is highly toxic and historically was often just dumped directly into the adjacent soil or water.
Just right into the bay.
Yep. Add to that the heavy metals from the railroad shops, the sawdust and chemical treatments from the lumber mills, and the biological waste from the canneries.
Oh, the smell must have been awful.
It was. The shoreline wasn't just ugly. It was a deeply contaminated hazard zone.
Which completely flips our modern understanding of real estate value.
It really does.
Today, a house with a water view is the absolute peak of the market.
Of course.
But historically, if you lived in Bellingham during the height of this industrial era, the waterfront was the absolute last place you wanted to be.
The socioeconomic geography of the city was inverted.
How so?
The wealthy factory owners built their grand estates high up on the hills, well above the smog layer, and specifically oriented their architecture to face away from the loud, dirty, foul-smelling bay.
They didn't even want to look at the water.
No. The residential streets, immediately above the industrial edge, the areas now considered prime real estate, were originally inhabited by fishermen, mill workers, and laboring families who had no choice but to endure the daily pollution.
That mental shift is wild to me. It's like finding out your favorite, pristine, incense-burning yoga studio used to be a loud, grease-stained tractor repair shop.
That's a very accurate comparison.
But that transition from toxic waste dump to pristine public park didn't happen by accident, and it certainly wasn't handed to the citizens by benevolent developers.
No, the reclamation was a brutal, sustained legal and political fight.
Who was fighting for it?
Well, by the 1970s, the heavy industry had largely collapsed or moved on, leaving behind these derelict, fenced-off, contaminated parcels.
Okay.
Commercial developers looked at that cheap, empty land and saw massive potential for private, high-density commercial exploitation.
But the community pushed back.
Huge pushback.
The guide highlights that local grassroots organizations, specifically the local Rotary Club and a YWCA environmental action group, spent the 1970s fighting tooth and nail to reclaim this land for the public.
It was a massive effort. They had to navigate massive legal hurdles, secure municipal funding, and stop the commercial zoning.
And their victory fundamentally changed the trajectory of the city.
It did. Boulevard Park was officially dedicated as a public park on June 14th, 1980.
Okay, so 1980.
Yes. However, the environmental cleanup is not a one-and-done event. It is a multi-decade, highly technical process.
Because it's so toxic.
Exactly. The famous Taylor Dock Boardwalk didn't even open until 2006.
Oh, wow. So much later.
Decades later. And the shoreline itself required massive, ongoing remediation. The source notes that a major shoreline restoration of the North Beach happened in 2013, and the South Beach restoration was just finished in early 2026.
Wait, how do you actually restore a beach that has been an industrial dumping ground for a century? You can't just plant a few trees and call it good.
No, it requires heavy civil engineering.
What does that entail?
Well, for a century, the industrial operators had artificially armored the shoreline to prevent erosion and create loading docks.
Armored it with what?
They used something called riprap, which is essentially massive boulders, concrete rubble, and industrial debris piled up to hold the earth in place.
So they basically paved the beach with trash and concrete.
Pretty much. To restore the beach, engineers had to bring in heavy machinery, physically excavate decades of that hardened industrial riprap, filter out the contaminated soil, and rebuild the topography.
That sounds incredibly expensive.
It is. They replace the rubble with gently sloped pocket beaches and native plantings, allowing the tidal ecosystem to finally function naturally again.
And thanks to that incredible, exhausting feat of engineering, the park now offers natural shorelines that draw massive crowds.
It really is a triumph.
According to the source guide, there are two specific, massive draws that bring people to this newly restored edge. The beaches and the coffee.
Let's examine the beaches first, because this is another area where Schaefer's guide insists on expectation management.
Right.
The restorations created these beautiful, gently sloped pocket beaches. But if you arrive expecting a classic beach experience, you're going to be deeply disappointed.
Right, because there is no sand at all.
None.
These are pebble and cobble beaches. It is rocky, rugged terrain.
Yeah.
Furthermore, the body of water is the Salish Sea. This is not the warm Gulf of Mexico.
No, definitely not.
This is freezing cold, dark salt water with incredibly powerful shifting tides. And crucially, there are absolutely no lifeguards on duty.
It is an unforgiving maritime environment.
Yeah.
The geology of a cobble beach means walking barefoot is painful and laying out a traditional beach towel is lumpy and uncomfortable.
So it's not exactly a day in Malibu.
Not at all. And yet, if you go to Boulevard Park on a summer afternoon, the shoreline is absolutely swarming with families and young children.
Which makes no sense to me.
I know. It seems counterintuitive.
Freezing water, powerful currents, no lifeguards, and painful rocks instead of soft sand. Why on earth are people bringing their kids here?
Right.
Usually to keep an under 10 crowd entertained, you need highly structured play equipment, like massive plastic tube slides and rubberized safety flooring. This sounds like a recipe for a stressful afternoon.
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, it actually taps into a very specific principle of child psychology and play, known as affordance theory.
Affordance theory.
Yeah. Think about a plastic slide. It only affords one action, you slide down it.
Right.
Once a child masters that, they get bored. A dynamic, rocky tidal zone, however, offers infinite unstructured affordances.
Like what?
The guide observes exactly what kids are doing down there. They are skipping flat stones across the water. They're turning over heavy cobbles to hunt for crabs as the tide recedes. And they're navigating the large clusters of boulders on the north beach.
So the lack of structure is the actual feature.
Exactly.
The environment itself is an infinitely changing puzzle. The cold and the rocks don't deter them. They provide a sensory richness that a manicured playground simply cannot replicate.
Nature is inherently engaging, precisely because it is unpredictable.
Though, to be totally fair to the city planners, they did include a small, structured safety net.
Oh, true.
The park features a modest, pirate-themed play structure, literally called the Pirate Playground.
Yeah, but it functions more as a supplementary diversion. The primary psychological draw remains the raw, elemental edge of the bay.
And while the kids are flipping over rocks looking for marine life, the adults are engaging in the other massive anchor of Boulevard Park, the coffee culture.
Yes, the coffee.
Our source extensively highlights a spot called Woods Coffee. Now, Woods is a local Whatcom County institution.
Right.
It was started by the Herman family up in the nearby town of Linden in 2002. But they didn't open this specific park location until 2007.
And the draw isn't just the caffeine. It is the physical architecture of the building.
Which is so cool.
The architecture is a masterclass in adaptive reuse, which directly ties back to the gritty history we discussed earlier.
How so?
Well, rather than bulldozing the site and building a generic modern glass box, they utilized a historic structure that was actually part of the old E.K. Wood lumber mill from the early 1900s.
Oh, wow.
It had later served as a local pottery studio before being completely retrofitted into this cafe.
That is brilliant. By preserving the bones of the industrial mill, it gives the space a psychological sense of permanence. You are drinking a modern latte inside the skeleton of the city's blue-collar past.
Exactly.
And the guide details the specific amenities. It features massive windows framing the water, a large indoor fireplace to combat the notoriously damp, gray Pacific Northwest winters, and an outdoor patio that sits an absurdly close 50 feet from the water's edge.
It creates the ultimate frictionless morning loop for locals.
You walk the trail, grab your coffee, stand 50 feet from the lapping waves, and walk home.
It's idyllic. But this alignment of perfect amenities, the historic coffee shop, the overwater boardwalk, the rugged beaches, creates an inevitable massive problem.
Absolutely. Everyone wants to be there at the exact same time.
Yes.
And this brings us to the most radically candid, brutally honest section of Gennaro Schaffer's Real Estate Guide, the harsh logistical realities, the seasonal rhythms, and the parking nightmare.
Any public space of this caliber is ultimately governed by its rhythms. And the dominant, inescapable rhythm of Boulevard Park is dictated by the trajectory of the sun.
The sunset.
Yes. The park faces roughly west-southwest, looking straight out across Bellingham Bay toward the San Juan Islands.
The guide literally categorizes it as a sunset park.
It really is.
In the peak summer months of June and July, when the sun finally drops over the horizon, the islands are backlit in this incredible, fiery display. The park physically transforms.
It becomes an event.
The guide describes photographers setting up elaborate tripods, couples carrying in takeout dinners, and crowds simply sitting, dangling their legs off the edge of Taylor Dock. It is billed as the best free visual show in the entire county.
And that daily sunset rhythm is amplified by a massive weekly summer rhythm, the concert series.
Oh, right. The concerts.
Throughout the summer, the city of Bellingham utilizes the park's performance stage to host free concerts in the park.
When are those?
These occur on select Friday evenings, generally from 6 to 8 p.m., featuring regional bands playing funk, rock, and soul.
I do want to insert a quick hyperlocal point of clarification from the source here, because it is apparently a common point of confusion for newcomers.
Right, be their concert series.
Yes, this Friday Boulevard Park concert series is totally separate from a much larger event called Downtown Sounds, which happens on Wednesdays over on Bay Street in the Commercial District.
A critical logistical distinction if you are planning a week in the city. But those Friday evening concerts at Boulevard are described as community in its purest form. The lawns are blanketed with families, low folding chairs, and picnic baskets.
Sounds perfect.
However, that idyllic communal magic collides violently with the cold, hard limitations of urban infrastructure.
Let's talk about the parking, because Schaffer does not pull his punches here.
No, he is brutally honest.
There is an official on-site parking lot accessible off Bayview Drive. But relative to the massive carrying capacity of the park itself, the lot is almost comically undersized.
It is a textbook example of an infrastructure bottleneck.
It's that bad.
It is like trying to force a fire hose volume of water through a standard garden hose nozzle.
Yikes.
The sheer volume of induced demand, thousands of people wanting to see the sunset or hear the band, vastly overwhelms the vehicular infrastructure designed to support it.
Trying to park here on a sunny Friday evening sounds like trying to find a spot at the mall on Black Friday. You're going to spend more time circling than relaxing.
That's exactly what happens. The guide says that on a sunny summer weekend, or worse, a Friday concert night, attempting to use that parking lot is an absolute nightmare.
It's just gridlock.
You have hundreds of cars aggressively circling a tiny asphalt footprint.
Is there any overflow parking?
There's some limited street parking up in the dense residential neighborhood above the park.
Mm-hmm.
But then you are competing with the locals and facing a steep hike down the bluff to the water.
And then you have to hike back up in the dark.
Exactly. The stress of the arrival sequence completely negates the relaxation of the destination. You arrive at the sunset already agitated.
Which defeats the purpose of going to a park.
Which is why our source, acting as a pragmatic local guide, provides a specific playbook for mitigating this friction.
So what's the playbook? If you want a calm experience, the guide says you have to fundamentally adjust your timing.
Timing is everything.
You visit on a Tuesday morning for a quiet coffee, or you catch the sunset on a crisp Thursday evening to avoid the weekend crush. But what if you absolutely must go during peak times? What if you want to see the Friday concert?
The guide's advice is absolute, do not even attempt to park a car.
Just don't do it.
Skip the vehicular infrastructure entirely. This is where you must utilize the active transit we discussed earlier.
The trail.
You walk or bike in on the South Bay Trail from either the downtown core or from Fairhaven.
And the source explicitly states that walking in on the trail is genuinely the nicest way to arrive anyway.
It really is beautiful.
You bypass the bottleneck completely. It turns the journey into part of the recreational experience rather than a frustrating preamble.
And beyond the parking bottleneck, the guide offers two more crucial logistical realities regarding the park's rhythms.
Okay, what are they?
First, because the volume of people is so high on sunny days, the municipal infrastructure cannot keep up with the waste.
Oh, no.
The city trash bins frequently overflow.
So the rule is carry in, carry out.
Exactly. If you bring a picnic, You have to be prepared to pack your trash out with you.
That makes sense. What's the second reality?
The second reality is meteorological. Because the park is built directly on the water, fully exposed to the sweeping maritime winds of the bay, it exists in its own microclimate.
Meaning it's cold.
It is significantly cooler and breezier than the inland neighborhoods of Bellingham.
The guide practically begs you to bring layers.
Yes.
Even in the absolute dead of July, that bay breeze that makes the sunset so dramatic will chill you to the bone once the sun actually drops. You have to pack a sweater.
So the rules of engagement for a successful visit are clear. Leave the car at home, pack out your own trash, and bring a heavy layer.
Now, the fact that the absolute best, most frictionless way to access this park is to walk or bike in on the South Bay Trail, that is not just a logistical tip.
No, it's a huge economic indicator.
That physical reality ties directly into the final, and from an economic standpoint, the most impactful section of this deep dive. We have to talk about the real estate.
Right.
Because Boulevard Park is not just a destination you visit. It is a massive lifestyle anchor that casts an economic halo effect over the entire surrounding area.
The halo effect is a fascinating economic phenomenon.
Can you break that down?
Sure. When a municipality executes a piece of public infrastructure this flawlessly, the value of that space bleeds outward, fundamentally altering the economics, the desirability, and the property values of the adjacent land.
And in this specific case, Schaefer's Guide points us to two highly sought-after, deeply connected neighborhoods.
South Hill and Fairhaven.
Let's look at South Hill first. This is the neighborhood situated on the bluff that climbs steeply up from the bay, physically overlooking the park itself.
Right.
It is an established, mature area. It is known for historic character homes, massive ancient trees, and because of the steep topography, premium, sweeping, unobstructed water views of the islands.
And then if you just take a short, flat walk south along the South Bay Trail, you arrive in Fairhaven.
The historic district.
Yes. Fairhaven is the city's historic district. It is defined by beautifully preserved late 19th century brick architecture.
This sounds charming.
It is. It houses independent bookshops, highly regarded restaurants, a vibrant weekend farmers market, and its own network of public spaces like the Village Green and Fairhaven Park, which features a historic rose garden.
Fairhaven is also a major functional transit hub, isn't it?
Yes, it contains the terminal for the Alaska Marine Highway Ferry System and the Amtrak rail station.
So it is incredibly dense, deeply historic,
yeah,
and highly walkable.
Now, according to our source, who we must remember, is a licensed real estate broker whose professional livelihood depends on understanding exactly why people are willing to part with millions of dollars. The incredibly high property values in South Hill and Fairhaven are not simply a reflection of the brick facades or the square footage of the homes.
So what does this all mean? What are they actually paying for then if it's not the house itself?
They are paying a massive premium for the connectivity.
The trail.
They are buying the physical lifestyle that the South Bay Trail and Boulevard Park facilitate. Think about how rare this is in modern American urban planning. If you live in one of these neighborhoods, your daily reality is this. You can walk out your front door, stroll down a flat, paved, incredibly scenic path, grab an artisan coffee while standing 50 feet from the ocean tides.
And then continue walking to a historic downtown for a dinner reservation.
All without ever once having to locate your car keys, navigate a traffic light, or sit in gridlock.
That level of seamless, car-free connectivity is almost non-existent in most of the country. It is the ultimate urban luxury.
It acts like a central air conditioning unit for the entire district.
Oh, I like that analogy.
A central AC system increases the value of every room in a house, even the rooms furthest away from the actual unit, because it provides a baseline of comfort.
Right.
Boulevard Park is the central cooling system for the city's stress. Living on the ductwork, the South Bay Trail, is the actual premium you are paying for. The park operates as the vital hinge for this entire corridor.
So when you purchase a home in South Hill or Fairhaven, you aren't just buying a plot of land. You are literally buying Boulevard Park as your primary property amenity.
Yes. But here is where the economics become truly fascinating.
Okay.
We just spent an entire segment detailing how this park gets insanely packed, how the parking lot is a total high-stress nightmare, and how the infrastructure groans under the weight of the summer crowds.
Right. I was just thinking that. If the park is genuinely that chaotic and stressful during peak times, aren't you just paying a massive multi-million dollar premium to live next door to a traffic jam and an overflowing trash can?
It seems like a bad deal on paper.
Why would anyone pay top dollar to live next to a bottleneck?
Because living within walking distance completely neutralizes the bottleneck.
It does.
It bypasses the friction entirely. Think about who is actually experiencing the stress of Boulevard Park.
The people driving?
Exactly. It is the person who had to load their family into a car, drive across town from a different neighborhood, and aggressively circle that tiny asphalt lot, raising their blood pressure before they even see the water.
The person who lives in South Hill never gets in the car.
Exactly. The resident simply walks out their door, strolls down the hill, enjoys the vibrancy, the sunset, and the music, and then walks home.
They skip the worst part.
The physical proximity turns the park's absolute biggest logistical headache into a complete non-issue for the homeowner.
Wow.
They are essentially buying a permanent VIP bypass lane to the city's best amenity. And that frictionless access is what drives the neighborhood's desirability into the stratosphere.
That is incredible. The flaw of the park actually reinforces the value of the real estate around it.
It's brilliant.
Well, we have covered an immense amount of ground today, both historically and geographically.
We really have.
To quickly recap the journey we've taken through Gennaro Schaefer's guide, we started by examining a piece of land that spent over a century as a smoking, clattering, deeply toxic industrial lumber and coal gas waterfront.
A completely inhospitable place.
We traced how, through decades of hard-fought grassroots community pushback in the 1970s and massive civil engineering to remove industrial riprap, that hazard zone was reclaimed, cleaned up, and completely transformed into an 11-acre public gem.
A gem that perfectly authentically captures the specific character of Bellingham.
Right.
It is not an artificial, hyper-manicured, quiet retreat.
Not at all.
It is breezy, it is intensely communal, it is highly connected via the South Bay Trail, and it is unapologetically real, complete with freezing water, painful rocky beaches, a slick wooden boardwalk suspended over the tide, and bustling, crowded summer evenings.
It functions flawlessly as the city's bayfront living room, embracing all of its chaotic, densely packed, beautiful glory.
It really does. But tracing that specific history from a fenced-off, toxic industrial wasteland to the most valuable, beloved communal space in the city, this raises an important question.
It raises a really profound question for all of us living in different cities.
It does. I want you to think about the physical layout of your own city or town right now.
Yeah, picture it.
Think about the forgotten, fenced off, perhaps deeply contaminated or derelict industrial spaces that you drive past every single day without a second thought.
The places you just ignore.
The abandoned railway spurs, the empty lots by the river, the old manufacturing plants.
Right.
Boulevard Park is living, breathing proof that with enough sustained community vision, political pushback, and perhaps a few decades of extreme patience, the ugliest, most inaccessible, most toxic edge of a town can literally be transformed into its beating heart.
What derelict, forgotten spot in your hometown is just sitting there hiding behind a chain-link fence waiting for its own Boulevard Park transformation?
It's a great thing to ponder.
That is such an incredible, empowering thought to leave on. The potential for beauty is literally hidden right beneath the industrial concrete. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into the source material, and keep seeking out those fascinating stories hidden right in plain sight.